8:55 Eastern Daylight Time. And Columbia and its affiliated stations bring you Elmer Davis and the news.
An armistice between France and Germany was signed at Compiègne this afternoon, but it will not take effect until 6 hours after formal notice has been exchanged of a similar arrangement between France and Italy. And there is evidence that some French leaders find the terms so harsh that they doubt if it is worthwhile accepting them. An official announcement from Bordeaux tonight says that the armistice negotiations are virtually completed. A little earlier, heavily censored dispatches from the French capital quoted Minister of the Interior Pommeret as saying that the final French decision would be made after study of both the German and Italian demands, which means not before tomorrow and perhaps later. Tonight, a broadcast in London by General de Gaulle, former Assistant Defense Minister in the Reynaud cabinet, who, due to faulty transmission, was at first confused with the present Minister of Defense, said that the armistice would mean surrender of all France's arms and occupation of the entire country. And he called for the assembling of the largest possible French forces to continue the war elsewhere, either in England or the colonies. Such an armistice, he said, would be not capitulation but slavery. We have had no trustworthy news of the French fleet today, except that some of its units were with British ships at Alexandria when the Italians made an unsuccessful air attack this morning. None of the many rumors about the French Navy are yet confirmed, but the flight of great numbers of French planes to Algeria, from which colony they can go on fighting, suggests that possibly some of the fleet may make a similar decision. Nor have we yet any details as to the terms of the armistice, news of which was first brought by our correspondent William L. Shirer in a joint broadcast with William C. Kirker, the National Broadcasting Company, from Compiègne this afternoon. However, General Hunsinger, head of the French armistice delegation, said that the terms were very hard, and he consulted with the Bordeaux government last night and this morning before he signed them. The French delegates then left by plane for Italy, and a remark of Mr. Kirker's that the terms would not be made known till after the armistice with Italy had been arranged and might never be made known at all suggests that the Germans may have had their doubts about acceptance. Also, this broadcast to the United States, which of course had to be passed by the German censorship, was released more than 2 hours. The German government decided to inform its own people and the rest of Europe that the armistice had been signed. Whatever objections many Frenchmen may have to the terms, however, it does not appear that much effective resistance is any longer possible except on the sea and in the colonies. The Germans claim today that the remains of 3 French armies in Alsace and Lorraine had surrendered, a total of about 500,000 men, though it was admitted in Berlin that the garrisons of some isolated parts of the Maginot Line were still holding out. The Germans also occupied the Atlantic port of Lorient and the Channel port of Saint-Malo, and the French reported that as German troops continued to advance down the Rhone Valley, the Italians for the first time attacked at several points and were repulsed. German informants at Compiègne told a correspondent of the International News Service that a conference for a permanent peace, not only with France, but with Belgium and the Netherlands, might be held next week, perhaps at Münster in Westphalia, where the Peace of Westphalia was concluded in 1648. Annulment of the results of this treaty, as well as of the Treaty of Versailles, has recently been announced as one of the German war aims, and it was that treaty which, among other things, gave formal international recognition to the independence of the Netherlands. Speculations built on Russian troop movements into the Baltic states were ridiculed tonight by the Russian official news agency TASS, which said that the Russian troops on the Baltic were not 100 or 150 divisions, as some reports had it, but only 18 or 20, and that they were not concentrated on the German frontier or intended for pressure on Germany. Good relations have been established between the Soviet Union and Germany, said the Russian agency, and these are based not on a passing motive of temporary character, but on the fundamental interests of the two states. European affairs are having their echoes in Philadelphia, where the Republicans are gathering for the National Convention, which begins next Monday. After the first flurry of protest against the appointment of Colonels Knox and Stimson to the Roosevelt cabinet, it was said today that Governor Stassen of Minnesota, the keynote speaker, will praise the appointments as a needed strengthening of the administration. And Governor Landon, chairman of the subcommittee writing the foreign policy plank of the platform, said that it would probably not be written until Germany's peace terms to France were known.
This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.
8:55 p.m. Eastern Daylight Saving Time, and Elmer Davis and the news. Brought to you by the makers of Post Toasties, who are sponsoring this broadcast simply to make this brief announcement. Now, in the interest of better nutrition and at no extra cost to you, Post Toasties have been enriched with vitamin B1, the precious vitamin essential to abundant energy, sound nerves, and good appetite. Post Toasties are the only cornflakes containing vitamin B1.
The Democratic Convention, which opened today, is still a matter of strong probabilities, but no positive and absolute. It's the practically universal expectation that the delegates will offer the president another nomination and that he will accept. But nobody knows, except possibly two or three men who aren't telling. Secretary Hull is still understood to be the preference of the administration forces for the vice presidency, but since there is apparently no prospect of persuading him to take it, Senator Burns of South Carolina seems most likely to be selected. Unless the delegates should revolt, as they did at the Chicago Republican Convention of 1920 after a dictated presidential nomination, and pick their own man for second place. Supporters of Security Administrator Paul McNutt are making a brisk campaign for him in case the vice presidential field is thus thrown open. Mr. Hull lunched at the White House today, but it was said that this was only for discussion of the Havana Conference, at which he will head the American delegation. Incidentally, following the German notes to various Latin American countries trying to discourage united action at Havana, it was reported today that some of the ablest of German diplomats from the Latin American capitals would be there as observers. The convention formally opened at noon today with welcoming speeches from Mayor Kelly and Senator Lucas, and then adjourned till tonight when the delegates will hear from Chairman Farley and the keynote speech by Speaker Bankhead. The Resolutions Committee, meanwhile, has been hearing from many speakers on many topics, including William Green, president of the Federation of Labor, who said that he believed Mr. Roosevelt could ultimately solve the unemployment problem if he was to deal with it. However, Mr. Green said later that this should not be construed as an expression on the third term. And Dr. Townsend threatened that if the old people of his movement could not get satisfaction on their pension demands from the major parties, they would start their own party supported by the votes of their children. Overseas, the unexplained delay of the attack on England, which the Germans have been threatening for the past 3 weeks, was pointed up by an editorial by the Italian Virginio Guida, who said that in a few days the preparations will have been completed, and then England will have to choose between submitting to Europe's new forces and undergoing the most violent war, end quote. This alternative seems to support the persistent rumors that a new peace offensive is going on, to which Winston Churchill may have been alluding yesterday when he said that the British would neither make peace nor parley. Another phrase in Churchill's speech, that London would be defended if necessary street by street, inspired German spokesmen to comments which seemed to indicate that London, which has not yet been bombed, would not be treated by the Germans as an open city exempt from air attack. The German spokesman later denied this implication, though it is hard to see why either London or Berlin should be immune from bombing, except from fear of retaliation. At any rate, the British seem much encouraged by their success in beating off the great air attack yesterday, and today's raids were on a much smaller scale, though several people were killed in southern England. The Germans claim that yesterday they did a good deal of damage, that three ships of moderate size were sunk in the Channel, and military objectives hit at Ramsgate, Chatham, and other points in Kent. The British Air Force again attacked in northwestern Germany and German bases in the Netherlands last night. Another success for the Italians in Africa. The British today admitted withdrawal of their forces from Moyale, a post of some importance on the border of Kenya. The Italians claimed capture of the town 2 days ago. Wang Qingwei's government in China has ordered the expulsion of 6 Americans from the international settlement in Shanghai, mostly editors or publishers of newspapers, English language or Chinese language, which have supported Chiang Kai-shek. Meanwhile, Chinese guerrillas emphasized the limitations of Japanese control of Shanghai by attacking the city tonight, and fighting is still going on in the suburbs. And that's the news to this moment.